This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I don't think I've ever felt like a bigger disappointment than these last few days. When, like, everybody has come up to me and go, oh, missed the roundtable on Thursday. Why didn't you guys have a roundtable? I go, there was a game. Wouldn't you rather listen to a game than a roundtable? No, I want the roundtable. Fine, it's coming back this Thursday, 10 a.m., 97.3 The Fan's commercial-free Padres Roundtable featuring Ben Woods, Annie and Elston, and Gwen and Chris, presented by San Diego Roundtable Pizza. For takeout or delivery, go to roundtablepizza.com. Roundtable, the last honest pizza, and apparently the hour of radio that none of you can live without every single week. So we will have one for you coming up in a couple of days here and discuss this current Padres homestand, which started with one of three against the Yankees and a win over the Miami Marlins last night. And joining us right now, good friend of the program, the manager of the Miami Marlins, Skip Schumacher, is with us here. And I feel like you're going to, like, your favorite restaurant, but then, like, they're out of your favorite food because Woods isn't here, Skip.
Hey, I still really love you guys,
Thank
too.
You.
I mean, what the heck?
Thank you.
COVID, the one day I get on this show, huh? That's how it works.
I forced you to say that. I know. I set you up for that,
Here,
but
I can
appreciate
fill in.
It.
Hey, Skip, it's Woodsy. You're so handsome. Anyways, you're so handsome.
My wife loves you so much. This is incredible. How many push-ups did you do yesterday? It's amazing. Actually, what is pretty amazing is your Miami Marlins have played some good baseball of late, like better than the Dodgers. Obviously, that first month was, I mean, horrifically bad. Skip, how do you get things turned around when things are as bad as they were? What, 6-24 at the end of April there? Ooh.
Yeah, it was tough. There's no doubt about it. I think the main thing is, as you know, the manager of a team is you can't let them see you sweat. Right? Like, you have to come in with the same attitude, same processes that you would be doing if you were winning or losing. Obviously, you're always trying to get guys better, so certain individualized, work days look a little bit different. But other than that, the last thing we can do is start pointing fingers or have our staff go sideways. And I'm really proud of how, you know, that clubhouse leadership went about it and our staff. And we stuck together and, yeah, there were some tough times, no doubt about it. Some tough losses. We made a trade, the whole deal. But I think, you know, the way they went about it shows, you know, really who they are.
Let's talk about that trade. Luis Arraez has been everything the Padres have hoped for and then some. And I get the sense that you aren't the least bit surprised about that. Just give us kind of your thoughts on Arraez, the kind of the person that you saw him being the last season plus in Miami and what the Padres really do have here.
Well, I don't have a bad thing to say about the kid. I absolutely love him.
He loves you too.
Yeah, well, we had a really good relationship. And you're right. I'm not surprised at all. I don't think people really understood how good he is unless you see him day in and day out, right? Like, you see some highlights, you see him for a three-game set, you're like, oh, yeah, he's a pretty good hitter, and then you play the next three games against another team. When you see him for 162, there is a enormous amount of respect for the work ethic, the person he is, the energy he brings in that dugout. He inspires other guys to work harder. And the bat-to-ball skill is there's nothing like it in the league. So I don't know if you want another guy up in a big spot because you know you're not going to get a strikeout. He's going to put the ball in play, and you know what kind of attitude he's going to bring in every day. So, yeah, he's a wonderful guy and a really good pickup for the Padres.
And I think you got some good players back, players that I know A.J. Preller was really excited about, like Jacob Marcy and Nathan Martorella, but not guys that are going to help your team right away. How tough is that, knowing it's probably smart and right for the organization as a whole for the future, but you've got guys on the team right now that know this move is not helping us in the short term?
Yeah, I think that's the tough part in my seat is trying to tell you know, players in that clubhouse that, you know, this is probably better for, you know, the future of the organization, you know, with the start we had, you know, stuff like this happens. You know, those guys, they don't care, right? They're trying to win at the major league level. And if you're not helping out at that level, they don't care about the minor leagues. They don't want the minor leagues to be more important than the big leagues. I mean, that's just the reality of a major league player. In our situation, and as, again, the manager, you have to understand where we're at the time. And you don't play GM, right? Like, you do whatever you can with the roster you're handed. And, you know, we still felt like we had enough pitching to keep us in every ball game, and you know, we needed some timely hitting, which we're getting right now. But yeah, at the time it was challenging. But you know, any trade that happens, especially at the magnitude like this one in our clubhouse, there's a shock factor that happens, and it stings for a little bit. But the game moves on; it never stops, and you have to flush it as quick as you can, as much as it stung, and move on because you have a job to do.
Talking to Skip Schumacher, manager of the Miami Marlins, Padres and Marlins tonight at 6:40 here on 97.3 The Fan. I want to talk about that pitching staff because you're right. You've gotten some really good performances lately. I'm excited to see Jesus Luzardo tonight, who's going to be on the mound. What's he been doing for the team? What can fans expect to see tonight from Jesus?
Yeah, I was ready for him to take the next step in his career. He was our opening day starter. He throws 97 miles an hour with the elite slider, and his changeup has really developed. He was on the IL for about 2 weeks, had a little forearm tightness, bounced back extremely well. His last couple starts have been pretty much lights out and exactly what I expected out of Luzardo this year. Another really good kid. You guys, you know, if he was, you know, he's just a special person, a lot like Arias. And so I anticipate him being on the attack, and then we'll see it happen. But that's, you know, that's a really good lineup he's going to face, so he's got a challenge ahead of him.
But the pitcher that leads your team in WAR and has really been the guy in the rotation, and this might come as a surprise to Padres fans, we won't see him in this series, is Ryan Weathers, you know, who was dealt late last season and, you know, was always talked about as a top prospect at some point for the Padres. Never really happened here. What has clicked for Ryan Weathers so far this year?
You know, my least favorite phrase is, it's just who they are. And I think that's, you can get caught in this game when you just give up on guys or not seeing guys and kind of move on. This guy was a really young, talented left-handed pitcher that was promoted really early. To his credit, he did all kinds of stuff this offseason, bought his own TrackMan, got his own pitching facility at his house, pretty much built a pitching lab, and figured out how to spin the ball better and how to, you know, manipulate the changeup better. He always had a fastball, and he came into spring training a different kid. Mel Stottlemyre has done really well working with him and trying not to live just on the edges, but, you know, to go on the attack. And I'm really proud of how he's developed, and he's been open to change. And yeah, it's been, I'll be honest with you, I didn't know what it was going to look like in spring training, but really proud of how he came in.
Well, you know me, Skip, I'll always try to ask at least one spicy question. And I know as a manager, you would never say anything about current umpires, but retired umpires are probably fair game. What was your reaction to the news yesterday about the immediate retirement of Angel Hernandez? Cut a lot of us off guard.
Well, I will say that Angel has always been a really nice guy.
That's what I've heard, too.
And I think that's what's been, I think, players will tell you that, managers will tell you that, and I really hope that is part of his story as well, because he did a lot of stuff off the field, that charity-wise, that was really good in the communities, and especially in Florida, but a really, really nice guy. Having said that, I think it's...
Did he ever throw you out?
He struck me out quite a bit, so we disagreed at times. There's no question about that, but I hope he has a really good retirement.
Oh, that's a very gentlemanly answer from the gentleman that is Skip Schumacher, no doubt about it. How's everything going otherwise? Family, good being back here in Southern California for a few days?
It is. It's great to be back home. You know, my son won the Trinity League MVP.
I saw that. Congratulations.
Austin Hedges. Yeah, and Royce Lewis as a sophomore, so excited about that. My daughter's doing great. My wife is awesome as usual. So yeah, very lucky to be sleeping in my own bed in my house, and you know, going down to Petco obviously is it's pretty cool to see, you know, the fan base and the energy and everything. It's just so different than when I first started there. And AJ Preller and his group and Mike Shield, all of them have done a really good job to just, it's just really cool vibe down there right now.
And getting to listen to your favorite radio show on your drive down. I'm sorry we weren't on yesterday for you, taking Memorial Day off. What were we thinking?
I know you guys are slacking a little bit, but I'm excited to listen to you guys back in Miami. I think you guys know that too.
I know, and we appreciate that. Say hi to all the guys that listen, Rod, and all the guys in the clubhouse as well. We really do appreciate it, man. And after tomorrow, best of luck going forward again to the Marlins.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Skip Schumacher, manager of the Miami Marlins, and there's a reason why he's one of our favorites. Obviously, we got to know Skip when he was coaching here with the San Diego Padres, and now, you know, he won the Manager of the Year award last year. Honestly, what he's kind of done this last month, I mean, put him in the conversation again.
Yeah,
he's
let's see how it goes.
He's got it.
If they stay in contention, I mean, you have to.
They're not really in contention, but they were 6-24, and they've had a winning record since then.
Yeah,
not a very good team. I mean, they took apart the GM took apart that team, didn't really give them anything other than, you know, signing an aging Tim Anderson, who has cost them now more games than I think he's winning for them at this point. And Skip is somehow, like, keeping it from completely collapsing. They trade their, you know, most exciting favorite player in Luis Arraez for nothing, as we said, like immediately, nothing that's going to help them right now. They're a team that's just screaming 112 losses. And yet, maybe they can, you know, keep it from at least going, you know, that direction the rest of the year, hopefully. And, you know, Padres, I doubt their favorite even tonight with Waldron against Luzardo. It's going to be close, I would think, with the way Luzardo can dominate lefties against the Padres. I mean, you know, they're a team that's won 8 of their last 12. They're not the team that you wanted to face right now. You would have loved to have faced them back in April when they could not win anything. But right now, they're getting at least good pitching. The hitting's not quite there, but they're getting good pitching.
Padres are favored tonight.
They are favored. All right. What's Matt Waldron's strikeout totals at now? I know that's one that you've been watching very closely.
Yeah,
every single time.
It's one of the weird ones.
The rest
today,
of baseball
though,
hasn't totally caught on to the fact that his ERA may not be great, but he's going to strike some guys out during the game.
Yeah, I've been able to make some pretty easy money on that this season. But tonight is one that I would stay away from. The line is 4.5, which I think he can absolutely punch out,
but
5.
But it's
-160.
Oh yeah,
there's no juice.
Pretty
there.
Low. Yeah, so I can see that. The juice isn't worth the squeeze tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, they always like to see him pitch deeper into games with that knuckleball. You can expect him to go five or six, and you know,
when the outings have been good,
when the knuckleball is good, they're probably going to swing and miss at it because it's just a really, really hard pitch to hit. I'd imagine Kyle Higashioka will be back behind the plate tonight, as he has now consistently for Matt Waldron starts, and it's another lefty lineup, so otherwise it would probably be similar to the lineup from yesterday with Donovan Solano at least getting a home run. He should probably get a couple of starts in a row here from the right side of the plate. So maybe, you know, he's been solid since they brought him up. He's been, you know, even better than David Peralta, I would say. Doesn't have maybe the pedigree, but he's been very solid for the Padres. So, you know, if you're going to get going against right-hander or left-handers, you expect it to be Machado or Tatis. Maybe it's Solano is the guy that gets their offense going a little bit. Going to be tough against Luzardo tonight in game 2 of the series. All right, we'll take a timeout. What are we going to do in this next segment, Paulie?
Oh, my God. Woods
that's right.
Actually sent us this.
See, he's contributing even though he's not here today.
And all the video says is Brewers fan dropped a Craig Counsell diss track.
I think you'll be surprised to the tune that he chose to create his diss track toward Craig Counsell, the manager of the Cubs.
It's as bad as you think it might be.
Yeah, this could derail the Brewers season, possibly, like the That's What's In guys did in San Diego.
100%.
That's a first-place team, too, so they're playing with fire. We'll get to that coming up next after a check of traffic. More Bennett Woods on 97.3 The Fan.
when you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Our thanks again to Skip Schumacher, manager of the Miami Marlins. Always fun chatting with Skip in our last segment. Earlier, we talked about Juan Soto and his reception from Padres fans in his return to San Diego. More boos than cheers, and the cheers, I think, were mostly from the Yankees fans that were in attendance. But nothing, Paulie, compared to the reception, I think, that Craig Counsell got in his return to Milwaukee. Remember, Craig Counsell, one of the, if not the most successful manager that the Brewers have ever had by win percentage. He's taken a team with kind of mediocre talent and usually put them in the playoffs or the playoff conversation every single year. But of course, in this offseason, not signed by the Brewers. So he had a chance to explore free agency and he got the biggest offer ever to be the manager of the Chicago Cubs. Yes, it was a division rival, but an opportunity that any sane person would say Craig Counsell has to go take. He's not going to get that kind of money from the Brewers. So he's got to go to Chicago. Well, yesterday comes around and it was his first visit back to American Family Field in Milwaukee since he left. And as you can expect, people were not happy. Well, I went to their, biggest, closest rival, the Cubs, and they were upset. So you got the boos, you got the traitor, you got the chance at Craig Counsell, and the Brewers got the last laugh with a 5-1 win. Yeah, they were not happy. But what we didn't know that we got was a diss track from a Milwaukee Brewers fan who went to quite a bit of trouble to come up with the lyrics for this, and it surprised me the tune to which it was, because diss tracks you usually think, like Kendrick or something like that. Like, is it a rap?
Or like an original beat.
Or something original. But
this is like a parody.
But this, we present to you, to the tune of Gautier. Here is upset Brewers fan on Craig Counsell.
Said you knew us, but you haven't got a clue. Thought you were headed to NYC, but then you went and joined the enemy. And now you'll be completely useless by September.
C-U-B-S.
Clever.
Part of who we are.
It never really hit me that you don't know how to manage. Until the D-back series when you pinch hit Winker twice.
What is that?
We never want to see you in Whitefish Bay. I hope the strong
Chicago wind blows you away, and Brewers fans always boo your ass forever.
Can't wait for the chorus.
I was going to say, I don't know how much more I can handle.
Just save it, Craig, and please shut up. Told us it was a new challenge, but your word means nothing. Now you're even worse than Favre. We listened to your reasons and we've heard enough. Why'd it have to be Chicago? If you brought us a World Series, we were going to go retire your number. We all know it's for the dough. And now you're just a cubby that we used to know.
Okay, you know what? I don't think the Brewers deserve to be cursed over that. I mean, is he a good singer? No. Are those pretty clever lyrics? Yes. Yes, they are. And I think they're fairly accurate and on point. Paulie, I'm giving him a solid A, actually. Do you disagree?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well,
I mean, I hate that song. I hate parodies of that song now.
I think he chose a song that people kind of hate intentionally, though, just to add to the whole cringe factor of it. I think he was trying to be cringy.
I'll give him credit on the production. He had a full music video and everything. But
clips of Craig Council. I mean, he put a lot of work into that.
Yeah. I'm good if I never hear that again. Just being honest.
All right. Fair enough. Woodsy sent that to us. So that's his contribution. For these 4 hours of the program. So hope you liked Woods's addition to the program today. Anybody ready for the NBA Finals out there? Not quite set, but almost.
You know, I was a little bummed because I was looking at the schedule. We're looking at two sweeps in the conference finals.
And then like a big layoff.
And then there's going to be like a week and a half because... Like it's, I know it's just a TV thing. Like why wouldn't they just move finals games up? Like, if both teams sweep, why not move the finals up a couple of days?
Wait
a whole week.
I know they
slot out the times.
Yeah, I know sometimes they do that, and it's possible. You know, like venues in terms of. Is there a concert scheduled in Dallas or something that they didn't expect, you know, the finals to start that early? I got no idea on that. I was expecting the Pacers maybe to get it to at least the gentleman's sweep. And they lost last night 105-102, but Indiana actually led three of the four games late and blew three of the four games. They could easily have a 3-1 lead in that series over the Boston Celtics. But like the last three possessions were just putrid. Two turnovers and then a shot blocked. They looked like a team that didn't want to go back to Boston to get blown out in game five. Like, hey, if we're just going to lose, let's just have it happen now. We can go back to our own beds and not get on a plane after this game. So it wasn't a very impressive. Once they lost Tyrese Halliburton, though, that series was pretty much over.
People in the chat are making good points about like the Dallas Stars are still playing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, so. They've got Stanley Cup finals. Those are like alternating days. They could have both the NBA finals and the Stanley Cup finals in Dallas in the same arena,
Dallas.
Like on four straight days, depending on how the schedules work out.
But I'm pretty sure even if the Stars were eliminated and not playing right now, like they would typically just wait. ESPN and ABC would just wait until the originally scheduled times.
Yeah, I mean, things have gotten so intricate and complicated with the TV schedules and like what shows are like planned on coming on after, you know, certain games and stuff and when game seven is supposed to be that I don't know how, I mean, it's probably much harder now to actually change those dates. I had not realized just quickly on the Celtics. Do you know they're 76-20? Now, during the regular season and the playoffs, that's like historically good. They've been really fantastic, and I was not expecting that. I mean, they're a really good team, but I didn't think that they have potential. If they go on and win the title, they're going to go down with, you know, like the Bulls, the Jordan Bulls, and those seasons of some of the best records ever. It doesn't feel like one of the all-time great teams, but they're right there, and likely going to take on the Mavs, who won game three on Saturday, or on Sunday night, 116-107 over the Timberwolves. And, you know, T-Wolves have also kind of given away some opportunities to win games in that series as well. Luka Doncic has had an amazing postseason, had 33 in game three. They can wrap that series. series up tonight in Game 4 in Dallas. So we'll have some more basketball talk coming up next. Jim Brogan's going to join us. So Jim, for a long time, he was a San Diego Clippers teammate of Bill Walton back in the early 1980s. And there's a reason that one of the first people I thought of when Bill passed away was Jim Brogan. And I'll explain, and we'll talk to Jim about Bill's life and impact and on basketball and the sport when we come back. Final segment of Ben and Woods coming up next on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. As we talked about earlier, spent most of the day yesterday covering the passing of Bill Walton and sharing some of the stories that even I didn't know about with Bill Walton, even though I've, you know, interviewed him many times. And I always use interview in air quotes because you don't interview Bill. You just put a microphone in front of him and then he takes the conversation wherever he wants it to go. And I thought the first person I thought of when, you know, trying to think who could put some perspective on this is our next guest. Jim Brogan is going to join us after traffic here, but he was a teammate of Bill's on the San Diego Clippers back in the early 80s. And I'll explain what I think similarities they have coming up right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. And we've got former San Diego Clipper Jim Brogan on the line right now. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Ben and Woods with Ben and Paul this morning. How are you?
Hey, great to hear from you guys, and thank you for having me on.
It's always good having you on. And obviously, you and Bill had very different backgrounds. He was from sunny San Diego, West Coast, flower child. You grew up West Virginia, you know, East Coast. But the two of you are two of the most positive basketball forces I have ever met in my life. Just kind of focused on the positivity in the sport. And I was wondering when you had a chance to be teammates with him, if that was a connection you made back then, and just some of those thoughts on Bill from those days with the Clippers.
Well, thank you for the kind words. And just to follow in his footsteps or do some of the things he's done would be remarkable. And playing with him was actually when I first came from the Golden State Warriors here to the Clippers, I was in awe. I mean, this is a guy that was heralded at UCLA, won all the championships there, a couple championships there, won, I think, 82, 83 games in a row. And I mean, I knew who he was because he had won a championship with the Portland Trailblazers. So I'm thinking to myself, first meeting him, like, this is the guy, this is Bill Walton. And he was just as kind as he is today as he was back then, intense, intimidating. And he was a force. I mean, Ben, I tip my hat to John Wooden because he could have easily just used his talent, but his fundamentals and the way he played the game. And I just remember the battles he had against Moses Malone with the Sixers and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the Lakers. And Bill was toe-to-toe and better some nights. And it all just depended on, you know, his feet, because he had such problems as he got older into the league. You know, he had such physical challenges, but he just followed through and you know, played through the pain in practice and in games. And it was an honor to play with him. And then whenever we went, I remember going to Chicago, New York, and people would stop and I'd have, you know, come up to games and I'd say, hey, you got to meet, you know, Bill. And he was as kind as could be. He'd take pictures. He would do whatever you asked him to do. And that's what San Diego is going to miss, along with his philanthropy and just who he was as a person and a father, a grandfather. And he just made such a difference. I mean, look at what he did for the Challenge athletes here in San Diego, and who's ever going to fill those shoes? So it was a privilege to know him. It was a privilege to call him a friend, and it was fantastic to play with him.
It's certainly rare when basketball Hall of Famer is just kind of a part of the resume. I mean, it takes so much work to get to that level that rarely do guys have time for everything else that Bill had time for, and ended up as a great broadcaster. And as you said, just all the things he did for charity throughout San Diego and the support he gave to all the teams, not just basketball teams. I know Steve Fisher gave him a ton of props for helping build up the San Diego State program with all of his kind words over the years. But I wanted to focus a little bit on the basketball, because he was a Hall of Famer. He was maybe the greatest high school, college player in history. But you mentioned those injuries. And even though he won an NBA MVP award, finals MVP, led the Blazers to a title, won another one late in his career with the Celtics, How much better do you think he could have been had he not battled the kind of injuries that really cost him about half of the possible games he could have played in his career?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I remember the first time when he took his shoes off and his socks, and you could see his foot with all of the scars and the surgeries that he had. And remember, this is in the early 80s where, you know, they would cut people open. Now with arthroscopic, you know, surgeries, you really extend a player's career. But are we maybe talking Bill Russell type wins, Bill Russell type championships, if he had the ability to stay physically healthy? That's the question we'll never be able to answer. But just being around him for a couple of years, you could see the dominance when he played. I mean, he'd sweep the glass defensively. His outlet passes were amazing. But again, that's why people, the regular person out there, you know, understand in NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, all these sports, pro hockey, soccer, it takes a toll. And you've got to be physically fit to play those 82 games into the playoffs, maybe even up to 9,500 games. And unfortunately, that was his demise, is that his feet and the constant traveling, the practices, it just took a toll on him. But we missed out maybe on something that could have been another generation of like a Bill Russell with his type of results.
Talking to basketball instructor, mental coach, broadcaster, and former Clipper Jim Brogan about Bill Walton and the passing of the legend yesterday. And I know, and maybe you can speak to this time, but I know Bill has said in the past that one of his regrets, he felt like he was partly responsible for the Clippers not being able to stay in San Diego, that if he had stayed healthy and they had had more success, that they might have still been around. I don't think that that's true. I think Donald Sterling, like Dean Spanos, was going to L.A. no matter what when he got that opportunity. But was it really something that kind of ate at him from what you saw?
Well, because he is a San Diegan and he went to Helix High School, as you said, and you know he went to college just up the street, UCLA. He did not get along with Sterling at all. I mean, you could see it. There's times there was kind of a disdain in that.
That's a good
relationship,
by the way.
Yeah, probably, definitely. Now we know. Yeah. But it's a shame because he's such a proud San Diegan, and what he did for so many charities, and that tells you the type of person. He's making that statement that he felt responsible for the team leaving. That's who Bill Walton was. He was a leader. Period. I mean, that's what you appreciate about him. He wanted to win championships. And, you know, when he did get to the Boston Celtics after the Clippers, I think he got rejuvenated being around Larry Bird and Dennis Johnson and a couple other players there, which that helped him tremendously. But still, he couldn't go. He just, the toll had been taken. The injuries had really solidified themselves. And so it limited him there too. But, you know, he was always bummed that there wasn't an NBA team in San Diego. We're this, what, sixth, seventh largest city in the country. And, you know, with his name, reputation, and influence, it did. He didn't like the idea there wasn't a team here.
I thought one of the interesting stories I heard yesterday, you mentioned when he went to the Celtics later in his career, won a Sixth Man of the Year award on their way to the 1986 title. But before he joined the team, and by this point, well on his way to the Hall of Fame, at the end of his career, he didn't go until he called Robert Parrish and asked him, "Are you okay if I show up and back you up? You know, big man, and you know, I just come off the bench and spell you." He didn't want to be a disruptive force with the Celtics. And to the Celtics' credit and to Robert Parrish's credit, he was like, "Absolutely, anything that can help us win, we'd love to have you on the team."
There it is. And that's something that I hope all of your audience appreciates. That's what a leader does. You know, makes that type of phone call to find out what's it going to take. Can I be a part of this? And you call the guy that's going to be playing in front of you. And it was about championships. I mean, I remember talking to Bobby Gross and Lionel Hollins when they won the championship up in Portland with the Trailblazers. And they ended up playing here for the Clippers. Bill was about championships. He was about team. And that just tells you right there with what he did, calling Robert Parrish, one of the great centers also. But you're talking with the Boston Celtics, and he does that, reaches out. That's leadership.
And Bill was also about conscience. And I have no idea if you saw or other people saw eye to eye with him politically. Obviously, he was kind of a hippie and protesting the Vietnam War and stuff. But what he believed in strongly, and he had a strong conscience in his own, his moral guide. And it really didn't surpass anything else. When he believed in something, he would put his career on the line for it. Like when he left the Portland Trailblazers, didn't want to go, but didn't feel like, you know, the team was having the best interest of the players in mind. And I mean, he was willing to sit out to make sure that his views were known.
Wouldn't it be great if he could teach a class in authenticity? Because he was very authentic. And I think that's one of the reasons people really enjoyed listening to him as a broadcaster, because he would say things that you go, oh my gosh. And then he would do things on the shows. But that's who he was. And so you accepted him for that or you didn't. It was one or the other. But he was entertaining. He was honest and he was authentic.
Last thing, Jim, the NBA today is very different than it was back in the 1980s and late 70s when Bill was starring. In fact, I heard that even the game 7 of the NBA Finals, when he led the Trailblazers to the win over the Philadelphia 76ers, it was on live TV, but they made them play at 10 a.m. in Portland because they had to get to the Kemper Open golf tournament live after that. It's kind of a different scene today than it was back then. What are just some of your kind of memories of what that NBA was like with him back then?
Well, here's one thing I can see. I mean, when you played in the NBA and you tried to go down the middle of the lane and lay up or dunk the ball, there was a guy named Greg Laimbeer. There was a guy named Moses Malone. They never allowed you come down the middle of the lane. You're going to get hammered. Robert Parrish knocked me on the floor one time. I remember, I had to go out of the game. I probably had a concussion. I went back in. But today, those games in the 80s and early 90s, they were tough. I mean, look at the scores. The scores were in the 90s, 80s, because they didn't have this run and gun, and they didn't have the proliferation of the three-point line, which, you know, Steph Curry, credit to him, he's changed the whole game. You now have guys that are shooting threes. I mean, look at Luka Doncic. He's 6'10", and he's taking three-pointers. So the physical side of the game has changed drastically. The athletic side has improved dramatically. I mean, the athleticism of today's players, and they're, you know, getting shots up within the 24-second clock. They're getting shots up within 10, 12 seconds deliberately. That's how their offenses are played. But back then, it was get it down the low post, let a guy like Bill Walton make a move or two, or someone's cutting to the basket. I can't begin to tell you how many passes he got to me, how he did it, going down the lane. And it was just wide open layup, wide open dunk. But he had, as we said, eyes in the back and eyes on the side of his head. That's the way the game was played. And it's very different, the 80s and 90s versus today.
As I expected, a tremendous perspective and insight on the life of Bill Walton from Jim Brogan. Jim, really appreciate it. Thank you for giving us and our audience a few minutes this morning.
Ben, great talking to you. Sal, thank you so much for allowing me to share some of those stories and observations and just a great friendship with a great man.
Jim Brogan, really terrific stuff, and a really remarkable life that Bill Walton led in every respect, and he will definitely. The rest of the country would respond, Pauly, to the death of Bill Walton. I knew it would be a huge story here, but then when I saw world news and top story just everywhere, that I was glad to see that, you know, they said in Boston, like, I mean, we only had him for a short time, but what a huge impact he had when he was here, and people in Portland calling and saying he was my favorite, I mean, player and got me into basketball growing up, and just all different parts of the country that respected and loved Bill Walton, not just here in San Diego. So that was pretty good. All right. We got just a couple minutes left. Finish with the Padres, as they really have a chance to do something and take care of some business that they have not been able to do all season long. And that is actually sweep a team. Now, I know they're still two wins away. Today, though, feels like the pivot game of this series. Obviously, you have to win them all to sweep, but this is the one with Waldron against Luzardo that you're feeling probably the most dicey about in the series. It's a night game.
It's going to be a good win.
It's against a lefty, home night game against lefties. It's the trifecta of Padres failures this year. Left-handed starting pitching, home game at night. That's All those three have added up to losses pretty much every single time the Padres have taken the field. As we talked about earlier, spent most of the day yesterday covering the passing of Bill Walton and sharing some of the stories that even I didn't know about with Bill Walton, even though I've, you know, interviewed him many times. And I always use interview in air quotes because you don't interview Bill. You just put a microphone in front of him and then he takes the conversation wherever he wants it to go. And I thought the first person I thought of when, you know, trying to think who could put some perspective on this is our next guest. Jim Brogan is going to join us after traffic here, but he was a teammate of Bill's on the San Diego Clippers back in the early 80s. And I'll explain what I think similarities they have coming up right after this check of traffic on 97.3 The Fan. And we've got former San Diego Clipper Jim Brogan on the line right now. Jim, good morning. Welcome to Ben and Woods with Ben and Paul this morning. How are you?
Hey, great to hear from you guys, and thank you for having me on.
It's always good having you on. And obviously, you and Bill had very different backgrounds. He was from sunny San Diego, West Coast, flower child. You grew up West Virginia, you know, East Coast. But the two of you are two of the most positive basketball forces I have ever met in my life. Just kind of focused on the positivity in the sport. And I was wondering when you had a chance to be teammates with him, if that was a connection you made back then and just some of those thoughts on Bill from those days with the Clippers.
Well, thank you for the kind words. And just to follow in his footsteps or do some of the things he's done would be remarkable. And playing with him was actually when I first came from the Golden State Warriors here to the Clippers, I was in awe. I mean, this is a guy that was heralded at UCLA, won all the championships there, a couple championships there, won, I think, 82, 83 games in a row. And I mean, I knew who he was because he had won a championship with the Portland Trailblazers. So I'm thinking to myself, first meeting him, like, this is the guy. This is Bill Walton. And he was just as kind as he is today as he was back then, intense, intimidating. And he was a force. I mean, Ben, I tip my hat to John Wooden because he could have easily just used his talent, but his fundamentals and the way he played the game. And I just remember the battles he had against Moses Malone with the Sixers and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar with the Lakers. And Bill was toe-to-toe and better some nights. And it all just depended on, you know, his feet because he had such problems as he got older into the league. You know, he had such physical challenges, but he just followed through and you know, played through the pain in practice and in games. And it was an honor to play with him. And then whenever we went, I remember going to Chicago, New York, and people would stop. And I'd have, you know, come up to games and say, hey, you got to meet, you know, Bill. And he was as kind as could be. He'd take pictures. He would do whatever you asked him to do. And that's what San Diego was going to miss, along with his philanthropy and just – who he was as a person and a father, a grandfather, and he just made such a difference. I mean, look at what he did for the challenged athletes here in San Diego, and who's ever going to fill those shoes? So it was a privilege to know him. It was a privilege to call him a friend, and it was fantastic to play with him.
It's certainly rare when basketball Hall of Famer is just kind of a part of the resume. I mean, it takes so much work to get to that level that rarely do guys have time for everything else that Bill had time for, and ended up as a great broadcaster. And as you said, just all the things he did for charity throughout San Diego and the support he gave to all the teams, not just basketball teams. I know Steve Fisher gave him a ton of props for helping build up the San Diego State program with all of his kind words over the years. But I wanted to focus a little bit on the basketball because he was a Hall of Famer. He was maybe the greatest high school, college player in history. But you mentioned those injuries. And even though he won an NBA MVP award, finals MVP, led the Blazers to a title, won another one late in his career with the Celtics, how much better do you think he could have been had he not battled the kind of injuries that really cost him about half of the possible games he could have played in his career?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I remember the first time when he took his shoes off and his socks and you could see his foot with all of the scars and the surgeries that he had. And remember, this is in the early 80s where, you know, they would cut people open. Now with arthroscopic, you know, surgeries, you really extend a player's career. But are we maybe talking Bill Russell type wins, Bill Russell type championships? if he had the ability to stay physically healthy, that's the question we'll never be able to answer. But just being around him for a couple of years, you could see the dominance when he played. I mean, he'd sweep the glass defensively. His outlet passes were amazing. But again, that's why people, the regular person out there, you know, understand in NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, all these sports, pro hockey, soccer, it takes a toll. And you've got to be physically fit to play those 82 games into the playoffs, maybe even up to 9,500 games. And unfortunately, that was his demise, is that his feet and the constant traveling, the practices, it just took a toll on him. But we missed out maybe on something that could have been another generation of like a Bill Russell with his type of results.
Talking to basketball instructor, mental coach, broadcaster, and former Clipper Jim Brogan about Bill Walton and the passing of the legend yesterday. And I know, and maybe you can speak to this time, but I know Bill has said in the past that one of his regrets, he felt like he was partly responsible for the Clippers not being able to stay in San Diego, that if he had stayed healthy and they had had more success, that they might have still been around. I don't think that that's true. I think Donald Sterling, like Dean Spanos, was going to L.A. no matter what when he got that opportunity. But was it really something that kind of ate at him from what you saw?
Well, because he is a San Diegan and he went to Helix High School, as you said, and you know he went to college just up the street, UCLA. He did not get along with Sterling at all. I mean, you could see it. There's times there was kind of a disdain in that.
That's a good
relationship,
by the way.
Yeah, probably, definitely. Now we know.
Yeah.
But it's a shame because he's such a proud San Diegan, and what he did for so many charities, and that tells you the type of person. He's making that statement that he felt responsible for the team leaving. That's who Bill Walton was. He was a leader. Period. I mean, that's what you appreciate about him. He wanted to win championships. And, you know, when he did get to the Boston Celtics after the Clippers, I think he got rejuvenated being around Larry Bird and Dennis Johnson and a couple other players there, which that helped him tremendously. But still, he couldn't go. He just the toll had been taken. The injuries had really solidified themselves, and so it limited him there too. But you know, he was always bummed that there wasn't an NBA team in San Diego. We're this, what, sixth, seventh largest city in the country. And, you know, with his name, reputation, and influence, it did. He didn't like the idea there wasn't a team here.
I thought one of the interesting stories I heard yesterday, you mentioned when he went to the Celtics later in his career, won a Sixth Man of the Year award on their way to the 1986 title. But before he joined the team, and by this point, well on his way to the Hall of Fame at the end of his career, He didn't go until he called Robert Parrish and asked him, "Are you okay if I show up and back you up? You know, big man, and you know, I just come off the bench and spell you." He didn't want to be a disruptive force with the Celtics. And to the Celtics' credit and to Robert Parrish's credit, he was like, "Absolutely, anything that can help us win, we'd love to have you on the team."
There it is. And that's something that I hope all of your audience appreciates. That's what a leader does. You know, makes that type of phone call to find out, what's it going to take? Can I be a part of this? And you call the guy that's going to be playing in front of you. And it was about championships. I mean, I remember talking to Bobby Gross and Lionel Hollins when they won the championship up in Portland with the Trailblazers, and they ended up playing here for the Clippers. Bill was about championships. He was about team. And that just tells you right there with what he did, calling Robert Parrish, one of the great centers also, but you're talking with the Boston Celtics, and he does that, reaches out, that's leadership.
And Bill was also about conscience, and I have no idea if you saw or other people saw eye to eye with him politically. Obviously, he was kind of a hippie and protesting the Vietnam War and stuff, but what he believed in strongly, and he had a strong conscience and his moral guide. And it really didn't surpass anything else. When he believed in something, he would put his career on the line for it. Like when he left the Portland Trailblazers, didn't want to go, but didn't feel like, you know, the team was having the best interest of the players in mind. And I mean, he was willing to sit out to make sure that his views were known.
Wouldn't it be great if he could teach a class in authenticity? because he was very authentic. And I think that's one of the reasons people really enjoyed listening to him as a broadcaster, because he would say things that you go, oh my gosh. And then he would do things on the shows. But that's who he was. And so you accepted him for that or you didn't. It was one or the other, but he was entertaining. He was honest and he was authentic.
Last thing, Jim, the NBA today is very different than it was, back in the 1980s and late 70s when Bill was starring. In fact, I heard that even the game 7 of the NBA Finals, when he led the Trailblazers to the win over the Philadelphia 76ers, it was on live TV, but they made them play at 10 a.m. in Portland because they had to get to the Kemper Open golf tournament live after that. It's kind of a different scene today than it was back then. What are just some of your kind of memories of what that NBA was like with him back then?
Well, here's one thing I can see. I mean, when you played in the NBA and you tried to go down the middle of the lane and lay up or dunk the ball, there was a guy named Greg Laimbeer. There was a guy named Moses Malone. They never allowed you come down the middle of the lane. You're going to get hammered. Robert Parrish knocked me on the floor one time. I remember, I had to go out of the game. I probably had a concussion. I went back in, but today, those games in the 80s and early 90s, they're tough. I mean, look at the scores. The scores were in the 90s, 80s, because they didn't have this run and gun, and they didn't have the proliferation of the three-point line, which, you know, Steph Curry, credit to him, he's changed the whole game. You now have guys that are shooting threes. I mean, look at Luka Doncic. He's 6'10", and he's taking three-pointers. So the physical side of the game has changed drastically. The athletic side has improved dramatically. I mean, the athleticism of today's players, and they're, you know, getting shots up within the 24-second clock. They're getting shots up within 10, 12 seconds deliberately. That's how their offenses are played. But back then, it was get it down the low post, let a guy like Bill Walton make a move or two, or someone's cutting to the basket. I can't begin to tell you how many passes he got to me, how he did it, going down the lane, and it was just wide open layup, wide open dunk. But he had, as we said, eyes in the back and eyes on the side of his head. That's the way the game was played, and it's very different, the 80s and 90s versus today.
As I expected, a tremendous perspective and insight on the life of Bill Walton from Jim Brogan. Jim, really appreciate it. Thank you for giving us and our audience a few minutes this morning.
Ben, great talking to you. Sal, thank you so much for allowing me to share some of those stories and observations and just a great friendship with a great man.
Jim Brogan, really terrific stuff and a really remarkable life that Bill Walton led in every respect, and he will definitely. The rest of the country would respond, Paulie, to the death of Bill Walton. I knew it would be a huge story here, but then when I saw world news and top story just everywhere, that I was glad to see that. You know, they said in Boston, we only had him for a short time, but what a huge impact he had when he was here. And people in Portland calling and saying, he was my favorite, player and got me into basketball growing up, and just all different parts of the country that respected and loved Bill Walton, not just here in San Diego. So that was pretty good. All right, we got just a couple minutes left. Finish with the Padres, as they really have a chance to do something and take care of some business that they have not been able to do all season long. And that is actually sweep a team. Now, I know they're still two wins away. Today, though, feels like the pivot game of this series. Obviously, you have to win them all to sweep, but this is the one with Waldron against Luzardo that you're feeling probably the most dicey about in the series. It's a night game.
It's going to be a good win.
It's against a lefty, home night game against lefties. It's the trifecta of Padres failures this year. Left-handed starting pitching, home game at night. That's all those three have added up to losses pretty much every single time the Padres have taken the field. They got another day game tomorrow. I got Yu Darvish. I expect him to bounce back, in the series and homestand finale. Today is the one. And if the Padres can win the game today, they'll have a chance to do something that they have not done once this season. And that is sweep a series. And it's so, we've made this point a number of times. You can win series, like Mike Schilt says. You just keep winning series, you're a pretty good team. But you will never really put the distance between you and 500 that you want to do. Unless you sweep a series or two. It's just so easy to keep getting knocked back down if you don't win a few games in a row here or there. And they got the 4-game winning streak once. Last year it was the 3 was kind of the cap. That can't go on. They have to go on a bit of a run. And to do that, they got to start hitting. You're not going to win a bunch of games in a row 2-1.
Every team's got lefties. Got to figure it
out. You've got to start hitting. I think the pitching is at least strong enough that you could put together a winning streak based on the pitching. Every once in a while, though, Michael King or Matt Waldron's going to give up 4 or 5. You have to be able to win a game like that every once in a while when your starting pitching gives up 3 or 4 runs. You can't have to rely on a great outing every single time to win a game. It's good that, you know, they're winning most of those and the bullpen is now converting most of those games into wins. But the next step, if the Padres really do want to be the good team that Mike Schilt said they were yesterday, he said literally, you know, good teams take advantage of mistakes and we're a good team. He said that. We can talk about that tomorrow, whether you agree with Mike Schilt or not. To take that step, though, they have to be able to win games in other fashions. And it can't just be once in a while they score 12. They have to start hitting more regularly, like better teams, like Fernando Tatis Jr. and Manny Machado can do.
Yeah, we talked about Fernando earlier and not doing the stutter step around third and his home run on Saturday night. Said he's not feeling swaggy right now. And I think tonight would be a great night to start to get that swagginess back. I want to see it. I miss it.
I mean, it's got to happen
at
some point.
Man.
The Padres aren't going anywhere unless some of the swagginess comes back with Tatis and Machado. And as I said earlier, I'd like to see a bit of it from Kim as well. Ha-Sung Kim feels like a shell of himself at the bottom of the order. I mean, that guy was hitting, you know, 5th, 3rd, 2nd last year. Now he's buried 8th, 9th.
He let
9th,
off a ton.
And I mean, we need some swagginess from all three of those right-handers against lefties coming up. All right, that's it for us. Annie and Elston are coming up next. Hopefully we'll get Woods back sooner rather than later. But great job, Paulie, as always, executive producer. I'm Ben Higgins. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. From all of us here at San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. So long, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.